Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn. You're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Affordable housing has sat at the forefront of many municipal politicians for more than a year. Since the campaign and election of councils just over a year ago, it is a priority for many. In some cases, there are concrete steps being taken. Meanwhile, in the background, Northumberland County Council and staff have toiled away on this issue for nearly a decade, slowly developing a framework and putting into place the pieces of an affordable housing strategy. From the Housing First initiatives to a regular homeless people's survey to an overarching affordable housing strategy, the groundwork has been laid. On December 2nd, representatives of the county and its consultants, Consulting appeared before council to make some very specific recommendations to politicians about the community needs in terms of meeting the demands for affordable housing. It is a milestone in this journey as it provides actionable items town politicians can take moving forward to address this crisis in the community. With me today in studio to help us understand these recommendations for the county and the local municipalities are Northumberland County Director of Community and Social Service Lisa Horn and Housing Services Manager Rebecca Carmen. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a while since I've had the pleasure of interviewing you. It was in June of 2018, and before that it was December of 2016 that we last spoke. It's nice to have you both back. What is the significance of the SHS consultant study in the context of all the other work that has been done to date related to affordable housing?
I think what the strategy does is it sets a foundation for both the county and all member municipalities to look at what tools we have that we can work together to put together a package that may support and incentivize the creation of more affordable housing in our community. I think it also really articulates the needs in ways that we haven't known specifics of in the past, along with what is needed if we're going to be able to achieve our vision within the time period of the strategy.
Okay, Rebecca, how does that then fit within the context of the other work that has been done before now? Because, I mean, like I said, this has been going on for a decade. Can you sort of walk us through each of the pieces that have been laid in place so that we're now at this place where we're talking about actionable items in a very different way than we've talked about them before?
Sure. I think it's really, it speaks to the general movement within the sector of housing and homelessness. Housing and homelessness is a broad range of challenges, issues, needs, folks who are impacted by it, things that are needing to be done. And what this is it's really looking at how can we target the creation of new affordable and rental housing in Northumberland County. So a lot of the previous plans have talked about the need to look at ways to create housing. And this is really, as you said, this is the way that it sets out those specific actions that could be considered within legislative jurisdictions.
How much did the, the best person to ask would be Lisa, how much has this study cost the county?
I don't have that specific number handy with us right now, but that was part of the planning processes that we have. So I don't have that specific cost, and I think there's been a number of additional studies that have come along the way. I think it's an important investment in order for us to be able to consider, as you said, the complicated legislation that's come forward, to be able to put it in a way that's meaningful and that we're all working from the same page. So I think it's a really important study and moving us away from just these are things we'd like to do or we think we can do, and actually giving planners and councils and community partners real things that they can grab onto and see where they fit and options. I think we sort of talked about it at one of our council presentations. It's a menu of options. It's not just about you can just do this or this. this. It's about what fits for your specific municipality and how your specific municipality can respond based on what they need. So it's there's the county, and then there, of course, the member municipality strategies, which I think is a really important, we believe was a really important piece, because we know there's a lot of unique municipalities out there with different needs and different focuses. So the strategy was supported by council as a strong investment in the way we can move forward and start tackling the problem of our housing in this area.
So the presentation that was done on December 2nd for Cobourg, I know it was tailored for Cobourg. Have you done any other presentations at any of the other councils just yet, or are those coming up?
Yes. So as Lisa said, that was part of the key foundation of the strategy. So we actually haven't, SHS has partnered with us not to just create one strategy, but they've actually created 8 strategies. So each member municipality has a separate strategy alongside the county has a strategy as well. We've presented thus far to 5 of 7 of our member municipalities, and the last 2 will be next week. So we will have gone to all 7 member municipalities by the end of December.
Who's left?
Hamilton and Brighton.
Very good. Yeah. All right. What's been the reaction then? What's been the reaction from councils once you finish the presentations? What sort of feedback are you getting from them?
I think we're getting some strong support from member municipal councils and staff. I will acknowledge the work that has been put in by member municipal staff leading up to this in support of the development of the strategy and already doing some preliminary implementation. So we've had a great level of support. I think there's always some discussion around the level of need that, especially when we look at the percentage of folks in our community that are spending more than 50% of their income towards shelter, those folks are a relatively imminent risk of homelessness. So I think that's always a good conversation. I think realistically, the conversations are around some of the feasibility of it, and that's what our next step is. Our next step is that we are hoping that all member municipalities will accept the report for information, and that we will begin to create an implementation working group with the county and member municipalities to really assess what is feasible and what makes sense within the current constraints that each member municipality may be operating in.
Yep. Just sort of adding to that as well,
please.
I think not to underscore the importance and the participation and cooperation we've had from all county staff, member municipal staff. We've been able to work with them through all of these steps along the way so that we're targeting the needs of those specific areas. And as Rebecca said, it's now up to the councils individually to start looking at what makes sense for their communities. But the response has been very positive in terms of allowing staff to participate and engage along the way. And that was really important so that we understood what the needs were of the particular areas. So we're appreciative of that.
Rebecca, you mentioned some numbers, some stats. Let's start to unpack those, because they're really surprising. In your presentation, about 9% of people living in Northumberland pay half their income or more on housing. What does that figure tell us? I mean, that's phenomenal. We're talking about more than half your income just so that you have a roof over your head. What does that figure tell us then?
I think there's a lot of thoughts that what we could think the figure tells us. I think where it really becomes clear is when we look at the householder in the low income deciles. So when we look at the presentation, it's when we look at someone in a low income situation who is paying more than 50% of their income on housing, I think it really speaks to things along the lines of the appropriateness of the stock, the appropriateness of choices available for households to have affordable rent, affordable housing. The general accepted understanding of affordable housing is 30% or less of your income spent on shelter. So someone who's spending 50% or more, you can make a correlation that household is likely at imminent risk of homelessness, as I'd said before. You know, there may be one choice away. Those householders may be making monthly choices between heat and food and all the different things. I think those households are really, really give us a clear understanding of the level of need across the spectrum.
I was also stunned to learn that there's a 9-year waiting list for subsidized housing. It boggles the mind. So if I needed housing today, you're telling me it would take 9 years. That's how long the waiting list is? I mean, just explain that to me, because it's numbing.
It really is. It's it's a stat that has grown rapidly and one that we are working really hard to find ways to reduce. Those are some of the key outcomes and goals within both the affordable housing strategy alongside our forthcoming renewed housing and homelessness plan. What it means is that in some communities, so not all communities, but in some communities, particularly in Coburg, it is about a 9-year wait list for subsidized housing, and it can go from anywhere from 9 years to 4 years, depending on the community. I think what it really shows, we're seeing in 2018, we had just over 200 households be added to our subsidized housing wait list, and we were only able to house 44 individuals. So you can see the level to which we are adding. Even by the way of the report, this report was presented in March 2019 to County Council, and our wait list has grown substantially again. It's currently sitting at about just under 1,000 by the time when we close out the year. And so there's a huge level of need across our community. I think that's one of the key drivers in looking at what are the ways that we can create more affordable housing options for the community. It's driving some of our development opportunities and regeneration and intensification opportunities that we're looking at. And that's really what we're trying to do. It's a very long process. It's very hard when we talk to households who are in need of housing now, and that's what we're faced at with the wait list.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible, because when I was doing my homework for this, I mean, in 2012, it was a 3-year wait list, right? And that's less than a decade. Mm-hmm. I also, though, in part of this, though, why are we not using the word crisis? I mean, if this is the situation, that there are people that are on the edge, that, you know, and if they slip, it's not like, well, we can catch you. It's, oh, sorry, we got you on a list and good luck. I mean, it really comes down to that. Why are we not calling it a crisis? Maybe, Lisa, you could help me with that one.
Well, I suppose to some degree, we could start looking at it as in terms of a housing crisis, but I think what we're trying to do is look at opportunities. We're trying to demonstrate through the work that we're doing here that we recognize the needs, and we're identifying the needs, and we're identifying where we can begin to start making a difference. And so in terms of helping to move forward and managing situations and not just responding as you might in a crisis, we have to think about this strategically, and we have to think about it long term. And so our focus really needs to be on how can we start putting in some short-term plans, which we've begun to do, and leveraging some of the funding that we've gotten either through the province, through different opportunities for different kinds of housing allowance and different kinds of ways in which we can help support people where they're at right now, but also looking at it from a long-term strategic, because it's the long-term planning and the investments that it's going to require over time that's going to start making that difference. And that's a lot of the important work that Rebecca's been building alongside of the affordable housing strategy, some of the things that she's been working on to start putting in place opportunities we have for our own growth and regeneration within our housing stock. When you talked about the RGI, you're absolutely right. We haven't grown rent geared income stock in, you know, 20 plus years. We now have an opportunity to do that. It will take a little bit of time, and we're going to be doing that planning. And so I think we want to assure people that that's where our minds are at, and that's what these reports bringing forward have given us, as actionable items to be able to say, we can now begin to make a difference, and people now have tools in front of them where they can make real decisions and not just guess what it might cost. They're going to be able to see how they can fit that into their long-term plans.
No doubt. I mean, all of this, the tension between what you talk about, the long-term planning, and yet there are real people out there that are in real crisis that are you know, as you talked about, you know, making decisions about, do we eat or do we pay our rent? Or if I can't do either, I'm on the street, and then where do I go?
Right.
And so, you know, how do you as somebody who's in charge balance or keep that tension that you're keeping the one eye going forward, and yet you're addressing the immediate needs of people who are in trouble?
Well, I think it's a really good question, because you're right. You mentioned earlier, it was just a few years ago where the wait list was at one point, and now we're seeing it. It's escalating. It's growing quickly. We know that our most vulnerable population is becoming more vulnerable. We know that things are happening. So it is that partnerships. It's what we're trying to do is, again, moving towards creating opportunities for dialogue between our elected officials, between community partners, between our communities, and the work that we're doing as well, and when I say all levels of government, because we're taking this information and we're trying to create plans and keeping those lines of communication open and working towards some of those solutions. And you're right, it's a balancing act, and we've got a great team trying to balance between what can we do right now and what are we doing long term. And it really is those partnerships, those dialogue, those discussions with the individuals I've mentioned before, those are going to be important pieces. And making sure that we keep clear on what our priorities are. It's very easy to sort of get pulled in one direction, but we have to start looking at what's the long term and what are the things we need now, and making sure our priorities stay aligned with the work that we have already done. They have to line up.
Rebecca, when I look at the study, I know that there's a spectrum of housing that has to be addressed, and it's a rather large one. I mean, we're talking everything from emergency shelters to transitional housing, low-income housing that includes both rental and affordable ownership. Then there's moderate income, and that means people who can buy within the market, and of course, high income who can also afford to buy within the market. In the strategy, emergency shelters and transitional housing is not addressed directly. Why was it left out?
I don't know that it was left out. I think it was really about scope. So I think when we talk about all of those forms of housing that you just spoke of, that's what we consider typically the housing spectrum, the spectrum of housing and homelessness options. And this strategy was really about looking at the creation of housing from more permanent housing that a household could have that would have a either a purchase of agreement and sale, to get really technical, or a standard agreement with a landlord. They'd have a right to that unit. So it was really about looking at how we can create those units. Those other pieces we continue to work on. There are some recommendations in our housing and homelessness plan. We continue to look and work and partner with community agencies on various coordinated response efforts. But I think it was probably a little bit more out of the scope of this particular work, but it's always important that when you do this work, you talk about the full spectrum and then dig into what is within your scope of housing. It's in the same way that we're not, the recommendations don't talk about what we should do to create, market end ownership housing. We're not focusing on those recommendations. We're focusing on that middle and lower income housing, more permanent long-term housing options.
Mm-hmm. I just finished an interview and had done an interview 2 weeks ago with people from Transition House and the neighbors surrounding there. And I mean, when we talk about housing, they're talking about a very serious situation within the neighborhood and within Transition House. I know you've met with them. What's being done to address that situation? Because right now, that's the only emergency shelter that we have in the entire county. Mm-hmm. So first of all, what's being done to talk about their concerns and addressing their needs?
Well, I think it's important to understand that homelessness is a complex issue, and I think that there's a recognition that it is. It's multifaceted, and there are many different elements that can contribute to why somebody may end up in a homeless situation. We have met with the county staff, have met with members from the good neighbors and spoke with them about some of their concerns, and were able to hear some of the things that they're focused on. And what we're working to do right now is to continue to build some dialogue with members of our community agencies, some of our first responders, our elected officials, to begin to look at not just the situation at Transition House, because you're absolutely right, it's an important landing place for some of the most vulnerable people in our community, and how do we meet their needs and ensure the needs of the communities as well that we serve. And we know that there's a growing vulnerability within our vulnerable population as well, and that's what we're seeing with some of the other areas of mental health or addictions that we're beginning to see emerging in our communities. And so it is that more complex issue, and so the solution isn't just my solution, it needs to be a community solution, and that those are the things that we're moving forward on. We are in the new year looking towards developing our community safety and well-being plans, and that's going to be the opportunity for us as a community to begin to look at those broader things. How do we bring in all of the spectrum of healthcare, emergency responders, community agencies that provide services to our vulnerable populations? How do we begin to bring them together again, identify what the priorities are. We've had good news with the Ontario Health teams coming to this area, so we have an opportunity to really bring together some strategic planning and the community safety well-being plans that we'll be developing with our community agencies and partners are going to be speaking to a whole host of things. They'll be looking at a lot of ways and finding ways in which we can have decision makers at the table, as well as how those decisions then can get implemented. What are our community priorities? And we need everybody's voice to be able to identify those community priorities.
Okay, that all sounds really, really good. But if I'm a neighbor of Transition House and I'm finding feces and urine on my lawns and my homes, there's garbage, there's needles being found, people are looking across the street and people are shooting up and there's violence, all the things that have been identified. What you've just said doesn't sound like it's going to happen fast enough for me to feel safe in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what are you doing in the interim while you pull all these consultations and put your plan in place? What are you doing in the very short term to give relief to these people?
So I think the focus here for us is that there's a couple of, I think we sort of look at things in a bit of a different buckets. We're looking at community safety. When we speak about Transition House or when we speak about some of these issues, I think they all get sort of merged into we're talking about Transition House. And really, you know, when we break it down, we're talking about Transition House and the vital work that they provide for those vulnerable individuals that stay there. We're talking about homelessness, which is a situation unto itself. And we're talking about community safety. And I think it's right now what we're trying to do immediately at this moment is trying to sort through what are some actionable items we can do to address concerns related to all three of those areas, because they're sometimes they overlap and sometimes they're separate, but I think sometimes we roll them all up into one ball. And so again, it's not a simple solution of we just solve this, it will solve those other pieces, because as you mentioned, these are situations that are happening outside of the scope of Transition House, and that becomes a community safety issue and a safety issue for the individuals that are suffering, of course, you know, a safety issue for those that maybe aren't feeling comfortable. So it's not an easy answer, it's complex, but I think trying to look at it from a number of different lenses, and we are working together at the moment to come up with some actionable items to address those three sort of areas to help people feel more comfortable.
Rebecca, some of the items, the action items that are listed in the strategy, talk about some really different kinds of things. One of the things that is mentioned is you've recommended that shared housing, or what we used to call group homes or rooming houses or boarding houses, and housing for seniors, housing for people with disabilities. You're looking to open up planning laws that would allow them to be located in any neighborhood, not just in certain designated areas. What is the overarching goal of that? Because that addresses quite a broad range of housing needs that are very high in our community. But at the same time, it would mean that, you know, any neighborhood that is out there, suddenly people can start putting in, a rooming house could be brought in, or, you know, a multiple unit dwelling could be put in. Can you talk just about why that's a significant piece in this overarching puzzle?
Yeah, I think that it's there's lots of significant pieces. So I don't know that this is a piece that's more significant than any of the other significant pieces. But I think when we look at it, I think that our understanding of shared housing is, or the common understanding of shared housing can sometimes be a little bit more outdated. We've seen some legislation come through and policy guides come through them from the province that talk about co-ownership housing, shared housing, as a way to support individuals finding ways to afford housing. So we've heard, I'm not about Golden Girls housing. We have some pilot programs along the lines of home share. Like, there's all sorts of ways that we're looking at shared housing. So it's not always our former understanding. I think the other thing that's really important to acknowledge is that when we look at ways to which we can find opportunities for housing to become affordable, we have to consider all different options. And we want to make sure that we're recommending that the planning legislation and bylaws that come from, that guide what we do, don't act as a barrier to create the housing that is needed and housing that's affordable throughout our community.
But it's significant, too, in the sense that this is, earlier you talked about the importance of the municipalities and the county working together. This is, I guess, the thing that kind of caught my eye was it was one of those good examples of how the two sides have to work. One of the things you mentioned in this in the strategic study is you call it YIMBY team. Can you tell us about the YIMBY team? Because we just talked not too long ago about NIMBY. So what's YIMBY?
So YIMBY is a term that would stand for Yes in My Backyard. And it's a way to look at supporting member municipalities, both council and staff, and county council, in order to support decisions that would encourage housing across our community in different areas. It is in some ways, a direct response to what the housing sector calls NIMBY. And I've started to realize that not everyone knows what NIMBY is. So NIMBY is not in my backyard, and YIMBY would be yes in my backyard. And we've already kind of done some of this awareness raising over the last 2 years of, or 3 years of National Housing Day, where we've released some press release and some statistics that talk about, yes, in our backyard, it's more expensive to live than in neighboring areas. Yes, in our backyard, it's harder to find a place to rent than maybe in Toronto. And so we've really started to really try to raise the general awareness of public around the current realities of housing and homelessness in our area. Because sometimes if you're not experiencing it, you're not aware of what your neighbor might be experiencing or other people in the community. So that will be a group that we will set up with the support of community agencies that we work with to help create that work.
Well, I wish you all the best and good luck with your final two presentations to Hamilton and Brighton councils. I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. If you have any suggestion about guests and would like to hear on this show, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com with your ideas. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at @rwash. I would like to read out any comments that you send along on next week's show. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this.